Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
No. I can't do Bobby Abe here. Welcome into our third and final half hour here of Sports Talk live from Alex Box Stadium. Getting ready for LSU and Kentucky, the start of conference play. I'm Christian Garrick, joined shortly by Jeff Palermo. Phone lines are open at 504-260-1870. Text 870-870. We are in the Champions Club. Jeff Palermo, part of the LSU Sports Radio Network. I haven't really been in here a whole lot. This is a fantastic environment.
It's a good place to come and get something to eat, get a little drink on before the game. It's going to be a little chilly out there tonight, though, Christian. We've had some nice weather for some ball games in February and March, but I was telling Paul in a pregame interview, this is kind of like Kentucky in March.
I mean,
Wildcats are going to be right at home for this game.
Yeah, I remember last year in 2017 when they played up there in Lexington. That was a cold, nasty weekend up there in Lexington.
Yeah, I want to say it was right around this time, too. Mm-hmm. Might have been late March when they went up there and lost 2 out of 3. And it'd be nice for LSU to get off to a good start this weekend, Christian. They have not won a road game yet, and the next two series are on the road at Georgia and Mississippi State. And this is a Kentucky team that's got a lot of new faces, not expected to do a whole lot in the Southeastern Conference. They're throwing a good pitcher tonight. But this is a series that you would hope LSU comes away with at least 2 out of 3.
Yeah, and look, here's where I wrote about it online. I said it earlier, Jeff. LSU's going to have to control the running game.
Yep.
Okay? If they continue to issue walks, Kentucky is – I mean, they've stolen 47 bases, I want to say right off the top of my head. LSU's only thrown out one would-be base stealer this year in 25 attempts. Their 24 or 25 opponents are stealing bases. And that's – some of that's on Brock Mathis, a catcher, but it's really on the pitchers. They're not doing a good enough job of playing games with the runners, the fielders, holding runners on, mixing up their sets, when they pause, et cetera, how long they take to get to the plate. But we'll get to the finer points of this game in a few moments, but are the X's and O's, so to speak. You got an opportunity to call the game tonight, right?
Yeah, Chris is obviously making his way back from Nashville. I was thinking I'd be doing more than one game this weekend, but that's not the case.
Short-lived, huh?
That's not the case anymore. But I'll be on the call tonight and then the games next week too. So I've enjoyed filling in for Chris, but I know the fans miss Chris too. So just trying to keep the seat warm right now.
You did a good job the other night with Texas Southern. I was listening on that call. I was streaming it on the SEC Plus, and obviously you and Doug Thompson did a great job. Now let's get to LSU and Kentucky. And, you know, here they are at 12-5, right? And they got swept. And I think a lot of LSU fans are still not over that sweep from Texas. And I get a lot of texts, and I'm sure you do too, on Twitter as well. Oh, this team is overrated. They're terrible. I just constantly have to remind them. We are now on March 15th. Mm-hmm. We are in March. If we're having this conversation April 15th, then we can go, okay, they're not as good as we thought. But, again, it's still very early, Jeff.
Still very early. You're still waiting for certain guys to develop. Cade Beloso has been a really nice player for them at first. But as far as any of the other newcomers stepping up, I mean, there was so much talk about Saul Garza, and he's not starting again tonight. Drew Bianco, we heard so much about him in the preseason. And none of these guys, and you lose a Gavin Duga to an injury, and he's out. So a lot of these newcomers that you were really anticipating to have an impact early on haven't done it. And then you have Brant Broussard, who you thought was going to be your second baseman. He gets banged up. So you haven't really seen the full team. And kind of what you saw when the last week and a half, take out the Texas Southern game or the Holy Cross game the week before that, there were games where the team was scoring enough runs and winning, and then there were other games where they weren't scoring runs or the pitching was – they just couldn't get all the facets together. So they're still trying to put this thing together. I wouldn't lose faith in them. I think LSU fans would be really encouraged if you saw a good start from Zach Hess tonight, because even if you go back to February, January, whenever you wanted to start previewing the season, to me this team goes as far as Zach Hess takes them. Because you need that kind of guy. He's got that electric stuff, as you know, Christian, and they need him to be that ace, that guy that you give the ball to and you're going to get six, seven quality innings from, and you haven't seen that yet, and that's a concern. And until you see that, I can understand why you would be concerned about
his stuff is definitely Friday night starter worthy, okay? My issue, though, is that he's a high-stress pitcher. He goes deep into counts. Mm-hmm. Rarely do you see the efficient 12, 13, 14-pitch inning that even Alex Lang at times when he was dominant didn't turn those in every game, every inning of every game. But there was an inning or two or three when Alex Lang was on that he would turn in those efficient innings. And he might have deeper innings, but you got to get two or three of those efficient innings.
Yeah, you need a 7 or 8-pitch inning, 9-pitch inning, something like that. Yeah, and he doesn't get it. I think he's still a guy that's having trouble trying to repeat his mechanics every time out. And
well, he's a violent pitcher. I think that's hard to repeat those mechanics.
So, but we saw glimpses of it last year. But look, his ERA is up there. I mean, what is it? 4.91.
4.91.
LSU's team pitching ERA is last in the SEC right now. So there you go.
4.83.
So if once Hess gets it going, I think everything else will fall into line. I think what's been encouraging the last few games. And I was talking to Paul about this, too, in a pregame interview. Ever since that outing from Devin Fontenot in the second game of the doubleheader against Cal, it seems like the pitching has gotten it has turned around. We saw a good performance from Marceau on Tuesday, or when we were in Tuesday in Northwestern State. Mikhail Hilliard's curveball really had that sharp break again in Natchitoches. Yeah, you had the bad outing from Aaron George. But other than that, Todd Peterson threw the ball well. It looked like the Todd Peterson was hitting 97, 98 on the gun in Natchitoches. And then you've seen good starts from there. I mean, heck, even Clay Moffitt gave you some good a good start in the win over Texas Southern. So maybe this turning it around, what would solidify it is if you can get Zach Hess to be what you think Zach Hess should be. And that's a guy that, again, 6-7, really quality innings. And, not being pulled in the fifth inning after giving up 4 or 5 runs.
Mikhail Hilliard, Matthew Beck have been really good out of the bullpen.
Yeah.
I think Trent Vitmire starting to come around as well.
Vitmire has been really good this season. He doesn't pitch in many high-stress situations, so he's not coming in the eighth or ninth inning. So you don't really – he's a sixth, seventh inning guy. So he kind of goes out there and does his thing. But Alan Dunn told me earlier this week the guy's pitching with so much more confidence than he did a year ago, and it's showing. And, yeah, I think he has been – he's been one of their more consistent guys coming out of the pen.
You're looking at LSU's pitching stats, and the thing that jumps off the page right away at you is 145 and a third innings pitched, and you look at the amount of bases on balls, 87.
Yeah, the 87 walks, and they walked a bunch of guys Wednesday against Texas Southern. Now, most of those guys that pitched on Wednesday are not really your weekend guys, so they have been doing a little bit better in that department. They did well against Northwestern State. I think they only walked two. Cal series, I think the doubleheader wasn't as bad. So you've seen some improvement there, but, yeah, it's got to get better. And then, Zach is a big part of that. I mean, 11 walks and 18 in the third inning. So that's, again, that's not really going to cut it for your Friday night starter.
Jeff Palermo getting the call tonight, part of the LSU Sports Radio Network. Jeff, appreciate you stopping by, man. Go do the pregame, and I'll let you run. All right, thanks.
All right, thanks, Christian.
You bet. Jeff Palermo. This is Sports Talk here on WWLAMFM.com. Lieutenant LeMoyne of the LSU Police Department just informed me that the tarp is on the field here at Alex Box Stadium. They are not going to start at 7 o'clock. No projected start time as of yet. So we'll be here with you until they get underway here in the SEC opener between LSU and Kentucky, live at Alex Box Stadium. The stadium, the Champions Club is where you can find us. 504-260-1870, text 870-870. Is LSU baseball ready for SEC play? That's our Blue Runner Gumbo opinion poll online for you at WWL.com. Cast your vote online or call me at 504-260-1870, text 870-870. Right now, if I'm answering that question, I would say not quite ready. Got a text here at 870-870 saying they're not as good as we expected. Just admit it. No, I will admit that. They're not right now through 17 games. They're not as good as we thought they were going to be, collectively, not just me, the entire national media, the baseball, college baseball experts. They all had a number one, number two. But, again, you're in March. I've seen teams come out similar here at LSU that Started out a little shaky, and then by April and May they get hot, run through the NCAA tournament, all the way to the College World Series, to the College World Series finals. I mean, baseball is just that's the landscape of college baseball. It's just the way it kind of works. It's in baseball, you can be okay in March, and by May, be one of the best teams in the country. It works out that way. Another text, they can't hit. Stick a fork in them. They're hitting 297 as a team. Now, I know some of those hits have been against the likes of Texas Southern and Holy Cross, but they're hitting 297. It's not just they're hitting. What it is they're hitting going cold at the same time that the pitching has been struggling. Defense as well. They haven't had all three of those facets, defense, pitching, and hitting, click all at the same time. That's what happens when you become a really good baseball team. All three of your defensive and offensive and pitching staff, all three of those facets come together, and they click at the same time. That's what championship teams are made of. That's how you get there. And it hasn't happened yet. Doesn't mean it can't. Doesn't mean it won't. Pitching is bad. 89-76. I would say that's a fair statement. When you have a team ERA of over 4, it's certainly not good. It's not just average. I mean, you know, that's last in the SEC. What's their ERA? Let me pull it up real quick. Team ERA of 4.83. Last in the Southeastern Conference. Those are not numbers that speak of an Omaha-bound team yet. Again, you have to qualify everything when you talk about LSU baseball with yet. Again, we get into April, late April, and they haven't won but one or two SEC series in that time frame. Then you got a problem. Then you can start talking about, this is a team that's just, they didn't grow up too young and didn't mature fast enough. By the time you get to this point in the season, those freshmen can no longer be freshmen. They have to play like they've been at LSU for a couple of years. They have to pitch like they've been at LSU for a couple of years. They have to hit that way. They have to play defense that way. Just a fact of the matter. And I talked about Zach Hess. You know, I really like what you've seen in particular. I mentioned Trent Vintmeyer, Devin Fontenot out of the bullpen as well. Landon Marceau kind of came back down to earth. Eric Walker also starting to round into form a little bit. Aaron George is a bit of a problem for me. But Mikhail Hilliard, Matthew Beck have been outstanding. Cole Henry, I think that they've found something with Cole Henry, the starter on Saturday night. Eric Walker will be there on Sunday. Once he gets his arm strength and velocity back, he'll be the effective kind of a finesse pitcher that he was in his freshman season before the Tommy John injury. His velocity is right around 84 right now. Before the injury, he would give you a fastball 88, 89 miles an hour, but he would just spot it up real well. I think the pitching staff's going to round into form. I really do. I think eventually, here soon, you're seeing good numbers. Mikhail Hilliard, a 1.23 ERA. Matthew Beck, 1.59 ERA. Jaden Hill has been banged up with a shoulder injury. But before that injury, 1.80 ERA. Trent Vintmeyer, Devin Fontenot, all at 2.35 and 2.45. Cole Henry at a 2.84 ERA. You can live with those. It's the Aaron George ERA of 9. Chase Costello of 11.37. Rye Gunter of 27. ERA of 27. That's what you can't live with. Those are arms that LSU was counting on coming into the season. Also, you look at the lineup. Josh Smith hitting 397. DePlantis at 368. Zach Watson at 359. Cabrera at 316. And then you got Cade Beloso. I think the bright spot of the freshman class so far, hitting 294. Saul Garza hitting 265. Brock Mathis starting to get hot, though, at 234. So you're starting to see some positive signs with this LSU lineup. But Saul Garza has been, I think, the biggest disappointment in the lineup because dude looks like a big leader. He looks like a Major League Baseball player right now. But the book on him has been get ahead early, throw him a bunch of breaking stuff, get him off balance. We'll be back after our CBS and local news headlines here on Sports Talk on WWL First Pitch between LSU and Kentucky has been delayed. The tarp is on the field at Alex Box Stadium. No word yet on a expected start time here at the box. This is Sports Talk on WWL. On Sports Talk, we are in a rain delay at Alex Box Stadium, and the Champions Club is where I'm hanging out doing the show tonight. LSU faithful packing the box. It is a very thick crowd here. It's going to be a chilly night at the box if they get it underway tonight. LSU taking on Kentucky in the SEC Series opener. Phone lines are open at 504-260-1870. Text 870-870. As you heard there, LSU basketball one and done in the SEC tournament in Nashville, losing to Florida in the last second. A three-pointer, 76-73. LSU falls out of the SEC tournament. They are the SEC regular season champs. Can't take that away from them. Should Will Wade be reinstated? And also, does LSU baseball look ready for SEC play? That's our Blue Runner Gumbo opinion poll online for you at WWL.com. Cast your vote there or call us at 504-260-1870. Text 870-870. Soon to be rejoined by Jeff Palermo, part of the LSU Sports Radio Network. And, Jeff, welcome to college baseball in Baton Rouge. A lot of rain delays. It just happens.
Yeah, is this a regional or right.
We expect this in June.
Well, what's crazy is we played a doubleheader on Saturday because they thought it was just going to storm all day on Sunday. Today there was, like, never really a chance for rain, but yet here we are in a rain delay.
Yeah, and it looks like it could be a while.
Yeah, it's a slow-moving – something coming up out of the Gulf and – It doesn't look pretty out there right now, and it's cold. It's cold out there. I was just walking down here. I'm like, man, this is going to be a tough game for the fans. It's cold, wet.
Yeah, and, you know, that's another thing that I want to talk about is, you know, people might be looking at the averages for LSU, the hitting.
Yeah.
And also the home run numbers might not be where LSU wants them to be or fans would want them to be. But, again, as the weather heats up, so does offense in baseball.
Yeah.
It's conducive. The hotter it is, usually the bats heat up because it's harder to get that ball out of the ballpark in February and March when you're facing 50-degree temperatures. The ball just doesn't jump off the bat like it does in April and May when the temperatures rise.
Yeah, and the Texas series, I think that was a big problem for them there because the wind was howling. They just didn't swing the bats well. I tell you, the games they've lost, their main guys just really don't do anything in those games. Antoine Duplantis, Josh Smith, Zach Watson, you know, those three guys just aren't – when they lose, it's – and Cabrera too. When those four guys only get maybe between the four of them only get two or three hits, it's not going to be a good day for the Tigers unless LSU's pitching's really on that day. So they got to really rely heavily on those four guys. I mean, they're getting a little something from the bottom of the order. We talked about Cade Beloso earlier in the hour. Brock Mathis, yeah, the average isn't good, but as far as a catcher – I mean, he's hit three home runs. I think he's got, three doubles? That's perfect for, you know, for a catcher.
You can live with 250.
Yeah, as long as he can give you a little pop, and that's exactly what he's done at the bottom of the order. I guess the questions are, you know, how long do you keep Hal Hughes at second?
I like that move, though.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just talking about the bat. Chris Reed is your cleanup hitter right now. I mean, who would have thought?
Yeah.
I mean, he wasn't
nobody
even in January. Who would have even in February when he rejoined a team, you thought he was just going to be a veteran guy coming off the bench, giving you an at-bat here and there. He's now your number four hitter.
He's hitting 321 for the year.
Yeah, but that's not going to last all long. He's not a guy that is going to really drive the ball too much. He's got a home run this season. But
see, I would submit to you this, though. I think he is a professional hitter.
He
knows the zone. And while he might not get a bunch of hits, I mean, he had three walks the other day.
Mm-hmm.
He knows the zone. So those, I would count those, even if they're three walks,
yeah.
I look at those as three singles because you're that's a productive at-bat. You're getting on base. So his average might dip. Say it dips to 280. But
yeah.
Look at his on-base percentage. If it's in the neighborhood of 400, 380, in that range, well, then you take that. It's almost like you're hitting 330.
Right. Well, I don't think that's how anybody ever drew it up. That's the thing. And so I think the question right now looks like Chris Reed's your starting third baseman. You know, how long you go with Hal Hughes? How long? Who's going to eventually take over as the DH? Who's going to be that guy? Is it right now it's been Drew Bianco here the last three games? But, again, I think Garza was a guy that you were really anticipating to be. I mean, he hit 23 home runs or something like that at Howard Junior College. So you were really anticipating him to be the slugger for you, and he's had – you could just tell he's pressing. He's rolling over on a lot of balls and bouncing them to the left side of the infield and just not giving you the kind of at-bats. And that DH spot right now is a bit of a concern because they haven't had anybody take a – and you – again, we just like we were saying in the first hour, you had all these new names and you're excited about them. Other than Cade Beloso, nobody has really stepped up out of those newcomers as far as the position players.
I mean, Paul Maneri has given Giovanni DiGiacomo an opportunity. He's given Drew Bianco an opportunity at that DH spot. Saul Garza, who – I'm with you. When you look at Saul Garza, you say, man, he looks like a big leaguer.
Yes.
All right? I mean, he just has every part of him looks and screams big leaguer until he steps in the box and he falls behind early in counts and pitchers just dazzle him with the off speed. He hasn't adjusted to that. And to be honest with you, if there's a concern for me in the lineup, it's not just the averages and who's producing, is it seems like LSU isn't able to adequately make the at-bat-to-at-bat adjustments through the course of a game. That happened on Tuesday night against Northwestern State.
Yeah, the Northwestern State pitcher was throwing curveballs in the 60s. And you just don't see that too often. And that was his third really good start to begin to – Colin McDonald is his name. That was his third really good start of the season. And he's just on right now. But LSU hit very few balls hard in that game. And that was – that was disappointing, but it was also one of those games, Christian, where you kind of – and LSU fans, they don't like to hear it because they're playing Northwestern State and you're supposed to beat them 8-1. But you got to tip your hat to that guy. He was a senior, and he had LSU off balance all game long, and it's just one of those days. It was a rough day, and they never were able to square him up at all.
No, they weren't. Josh Smith has been a bright spot, as you mentioned. Yeah. Antoine DePlantis also hitting at 368, and he's driving in how many RBIs?
27.
He's got 27 RBIs right now and 25 hits. So the production is there from your three-hole hitter. I wonder – I think Daniel Cabrera is eventually going to slide back into that cleanup role.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking he's kind of – and he's a guy that can hit it the other way a little bit too. I mean, the left center field, he's got tremendous power that way. I would think so. I would think so. And – You mentioned DiGiacomo. I really like his skill set. He's a young guy, fast. Obviously, the center fielder next year when Zach Watson moves on. But I think he could be a factor by the end of the season some way, somehow. And, again, that DH spot is open. So whoever can take it and run with it, I think Paul Maneri, he's looking for a hot hand there and somebody that could at least give you some really good at-bats and drive the ball a little bit and do some different things.
In 2017, when LSU made that run to the College World Series Finals, through 17 games, wasn't their record 12-5?
I know it was 11-5, something like that.
Okay.
Before the Texas Southern game, I think it was about the same record as they had in 2017.
So that's why I say to fans that are ready to pronounce this team dead in March, I go, hey, look at the similarities. Even before the Texas Southern game, right now they're hitting .297. That was aided by their Wednesday performance. Before that game, they were hitting .283. In 2017, when they went to the CWS Finals, they hit .289 as a team. So it's not that far off.
No, it's not that far off. You know, that team, though, you had a guy like Jared Poche who eventually was going to get it together, right? And then you had the freshman Eric Walker who really stood up and pitched and really gave you some great starts until
there was a stretch where he was the best, most efficient pitcher on the team.
Yes, yeah. So you had a couple of guys that you really can, even though Poche he threw the no-hitter that season, but then he kind of struggled after that. But you knew eventually he'd get it together, and he ended up getting it together. What is concerning is you just don't know yet with this group who's going to stay. Hopefully Eric Walker, once he really gets the stamina back after coming off the Tommy John surgery, hopefully he'll turn into that six-inning guy. We talked about Zach Hess earlier. Hopefully one of these freshmen become either whether it's Marceau, Cole Henry, when Jaden Hill gets healthy, could Mikhail Hilliard. You got some options. It's just they're a little bit behind right now because of injuries and inconsistency. But the talent's there. It's just got to kind of emerge, and long way to go here. Still 2 months away from the middle of May. So you got a long way for it to finally develop.
Jeff, I'm on record as saying I don't know that I'm totally sold on Zach Hess being a legit Friday night guy. But
there's no plan B at this point. I mean, if Eric Walker was health, if Eric Walker was a junior, not coming off Tommy John surgery, he would be that guy because he can. While he doesn't have the electric stuff like Zach Hess, he can be the guy that can go out there and give you seven innings that you're anticipating Zach Hess to give you.
Yeah, but
But right now, Walker's only a 3-4 inning kind of guy until, again, that stamina comes up.
And his velocity's down to 85 miles an hour. And, you know, I talked to Paul Maneri in the preseason about what makes Eric Walker such an effective pitcher on Sunday. Like, why is he such a perfect fit? And I said, could he ever move to a Saturday or Friday? Yeah. And the answer I got was, well, he's really effective, obviously, because when he was healthy, he was hitting the zones. He fills up spots in the zone. But really, Paul Maneri described it as on Sunday, when that team might have already lost two games, they're kind of sleepwalking in that Sunday game. They're kind of just still kind of reeling a little bit, and that even makes him even more effective. Yeah. On a Friday night, when you're the tone setter, and you know, we all know that game one in the series is the most important of all to try to win, because then you can take control of the series. And I don't know that Eric Walker could be a Friday night guy because he doesn't have that. He doesn't have the stuff that Zach Hess does. Yeah, he's efficient, but he doesn't have – I mean, on Friday nights, most of your Friday night starters in the SEC are throwing the plus fastballs at 95, and they've got, you know, exploding breaking pitches, and that's not Eric Walker's game.
Yeah, and Mikhail Hilliard's not ready to be that Friday night guy. So, the only guy that could possibly do it, to be honest with you, on the staff would be a Todd Peterson. Mm-hmm. But he's your closer at this point. And I don't see you flipping him, because everybody wants Zach Hess to be a closer. I don't think you're going to switch him mid-season. So you got to go with what you got. And again, I think if once Hess settles down here a little bit, and some of these freshmen, I think you're going to see a couple of these guys really emerge. And Walker and Hilliard are just only going to get stronger as the season goes along. So. It's not as dire. The sweep against Texas, it stings. You know, if they hold on and win that final game of the series, you're lucky. You sit there and say, okay, at least they got one out of it.
Yeah.
But because they went up there and they got swept, and you lose it in walk off fashion in the final game, it hurts and you're reeling a little bit.
But if they win 20 games in the SEC, it's not going to matter.
It doesn't really matter. No. You would like to see them play a little bit better on the road, though. That's
alarming.
You're 0-4 on the road, and your next two series are on the road. So
what do you attribute that to? I think it's the youth.
I think so. I mean, look at Landon Marceau. In that middle game of that series, they lose 8-1, and he can't get out of the second inning. And Paul Maneri and Alan Dunn would tell you that he got rattled by that atmosphere, never pitching in it. Now he goes up to Natchitoches, where there's 3,000 fans there, and it was a tight quarters there, and he pitched much better. So he learned from that outing. And again, you go back to that Texas series, your big guns in the lineup just didn't hit that weekend. And you have those kind of weekends. Sometimes those guys, your 1-4, 1-3 hitters in particular, some weekends they're, you know, 7 of 18 at the plate, mm-hmm. or whatever it might be, and then other weekends they're 2 for 18, and when they're 2 for 18, there's a good chance you probably won't win.
That's why you want to see a guy like Zach Hess and Cole Henry be able to take the reins a little bit on a Friday night or Saturday night when the offense is cold, and you can still win a 2-1 ball game because your pitching staff is going out there giving you 7-8 strong innings, and then you turn the ball over to Todd Peterson, who has blown two saves and two opportunities this year. But I still think that they very much believe he's still the guy, still the closer for this LSU baseball team. Jeff Palermo, Christian Garrick hanging out here on Sports Talk. We are in a rain delay. LSU taking on Kentucky in the SEC opener, scheduled for a 7 o'clock first pitch. That has been delayed. No word yet, Jeff, to when they might get
the plan is once there was a cell, they were waiting for it to move on. And then once that cell passed, it would be 45 minutes after they took the tarp off. So,
and by the way, we were supposed to be in LSU programming right now, so we don't have any breaks. Right? So you got to stay with me until 7 o'clock. We do have the news at 7 o'clock, but it'll be me and Jeff for the next 13 minutes at least. Phone lines are open at 504-260-1870. Text 870-870. I want to ask you, we were talking about this earlier on Sports Talk. You know, Will Wade says he wants to be reinstated, right, as LSU's basketball coach. And I understand that, you know, there's his counsel is telling him, hey, you can't go talk to the administration. But the administration wants to have a conversation with him. So I think it's really – I don't like the decision from Will Wade to say, hey, reinstate me. But wait, Will, you can't come talk to us.
Yeah.
So how is that fair to our program and our university to put you and put our program at risk by putting you – reinstating you as the coach when there might be an NCAA violation or two?
Yeah, and I don't know why at this point he can't at least just go and talk with Joe Oliva and F. King Alexander. And if he doesn't say anything, at least he went, right? I mean, he hasn't even shown up
right.
at the meetings. And I don't know. I'm not a lawyer, and I don't know what Will Wade did. So it's hard to second guess if he's making the right decision or not. But I know a lot of people are bashing LSU's administration, but I don't know what other choice they had. Because you go back to October, Christian, because when the whole thing first started and the whole wiretap, and it was supposed to be the attorney for Christian Dawkins wanted to introduce this conversation with Will Wade. And back in October, Will Wade said he had never done any business with Christian Dawkins. And then you have this wiretap come out last Thursday, reported wiretap, and purportedly with Will Wade on there with Christian Dawkins. And so as an administration, you're sitting there saying, well, wait a minute, you told me in October you've never done any business with him, and here's now a supposed conversation between you two. Well, I can't come on in and talk about it, and he won't. And it's just amazing that this relationship now has really turned sour when you had the debating or the two statements go back to back. You know, Will Wade releases his statement yesterday wanting to be reinstated. LSU fires off its own. So now it's this PR battle between the two sides, and it's not good. It's not good at all, and it's I think it's frustrating for the fan base, and then you have the loss today. It almost felt like the season ended. But, hey, Selection Sunday, it is Sunday. Let's see where they're seated. Let's see what kind of matchup they get. I still think this team is capable of making a run. But today was not a really good performance. The last couple days have not been very – well, really, since it's kind of interesting. You know, when they beat Florida in Gainesville, the program was never better. You know, that was the best moment when LSU went to Florida and beat them since going to the Final Four, because they won a game on the road. They won it on overtime. Then they were one more win away from winning the SEC championship. And then for that game to happen on that Wednesday night, and then that Thursday the Yahoo Sports report comes down, I mean, it was just a 180. And it's just been really difficult for the entire program. And it hasn't been very joyful around Baton Rouge. You know, everybody's really frustrated and upset about it, and pointing fingers at a lot of different people.
You think about it, I mean, LSU fans finally had a reason to be excited about LSU basketball, right?
Yes.
And then you see this stuff, and it's like, and I understand fans, they want to go pay no attention to the man behind the curtain, just keep winning. Well, unfortunately, the fans can take that perspective,
right?
But the administration cannot. I think Will Wade has coached his last game as an LSU Tiger basketball coach. You agree?
I think so. Unless he comes in there on Monday morning, or heck, even tomorrow morning. I don't know when Joe Oliva is coming back from the SEC tournament. He may stay up there for the weekend. But you know, if he goes into his office Monday morning and I don't want to say spills the beans, or at least gives a little bit more context of what happened or what's going on. And I mean, Will Wade issued a statement saying that Yahoo Sports report doesn't tell the whole story. So from LSU's perspective, I understand. They want, well, what is the story? And you're not, and you just get silence. I mean, if you're a parent, Christian, or if you're a boss, if you had an employee, or if you had a child that wouldn't explain something, what would, if your kid that you'd send him to his room, uh-huh. right? You ground him.
I'd say then, until you tell me what's going on, you're in timeout, or you're going to your room.
And that's kind of what has happened here.
Yeah. Will Wade's effectively been put in timeout. Text here at 87870 from 0694. Tip your hat. I'm 63. I could get this team out. Guys, they are horrible at the plate. They're hitting 297.
Yeah.
They are hitting 297, which if you are hitting 300, you're going to the Hall of Fame. All right, so think about that. They're at 297. Now, again, I'm willing to concede the fact that some of that has been bolstered by the likes of Holy Cross and Texas Southern.
Yeah.
But the numbers say they are hitting 297. So you can't say they are horrible at the plate, because 300 is not horrible by baseball standards. Think about that. You fail 7 out of 10 times in this sport, and you're considered elite. So you can't say that they're horrible when their numbers say that they're almost an elite hitting team when you're close to 300 as a team.
Yeah, I agree. I think they're – is there another level or two this offense can get to?
Sure.
For sure. For sure. But it hasn't been as dreadful as people – Anton DuPlantis has hit 5 home runs this season. That's pretty impressive for a guy that had 8 career home runs or whatever it was coming into this thing.
You guys didn't know? I tried to tell you this last year. He's a power hitter. Come on, man. He can line up there with Greg Dykeman, man. I mean, he can hit long balls, bombs.
And you just – I mean, I think Zach Watson's getting – looks like he's getting hot. Mm-hmm. I just think there's just spots in the lineup that you're trying to figure out. You know, like I said, is Hal Hughes the long-term answer there at second? I don't know. Who's going to be the DH? Somebody's got to step up. So there's guys that could – there's definitely room for improvement, but I don't think it's as dreadful as many people think it is.
How many times have you said that in March covering LSU baseball, right?
Oh, yeah.
A lot for the last handful of years. We've said it because we get off to similar starts, and it's not a finished product yet.
Yeah.
They don't look perfect. They don't have to look perfect right now. It is March. They're not going to Omaha tomorrow. They're not boarding a bus and boarding a plane to go to Omaha tomorrow. They'll do that if they earn it in June. But right now, I feel like a broken record, because I said it last year, the year before, the year where it's like, hey, they've got some kinks to work out. And typically they end up working those kinks out.
Yeah, they typically do. And I think there are options here. I mean, it's not like, you know, last year the pitching staff got riddled with injuries, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it really started with Eric Walker going, missing a year on Tommy John surgery. And there was just, they had, it just, you know, A.J. Labus, I mean, it was one guy after Nick Storrs.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there was just so many injuries. Mikhail Hilliard then gets hurt by the end of the season. They were really struggling. Heck, in the Corvallis Regional, they were just whoever could pitch, go out there and try to get a couple outs.
Daniel Cabrera had to give them a couple of innings last year on the mound.
Yeah, I mean, it got that rough for him, but this year I really feel like there are some options.
Fern in Algiers, what's going on, Fern? You're on WWL.
Hey, dude, I'm going to make a comment and I'm going to take it off the air. Make it real quick and simple.
All right.
If I had to go out on a limb and jump up and down on it, Will Wade didn't write a $100,000 check from his $400,000 salary. So it came from somewhere. If it did happen, hypothetically speaking.
It came from the shoe companies.
Wherever it came from, it came from somewhere. So with the NCAA doing whatever it is that they're going to do in it, and they're making their allegations and then so on and so forth in a telephone call, at the end of the day, if it's a parent that's sending a kid to his room, the parent has to make sure that they know exactly what's going on with that kid at all times. I'm good on that after that, brother. You have a good one.
All right, Fern. I mean, they asked him about it. He said he has done no business with Christian Dawkins. So LSU tried to make sure that they had all their information, and Will Wade said that's a lie. He lied to him.
Yeah.
So Will Wade is forcing the hand at this point of the LSU administration. Fern, I get it. And look, you don't know where – I'll tell you where the money came from. It came from the shoe deals. That's the root of all evil. I said it last week. It's the root of all evil in college mm-hmm. basketball right now, Jeff.
Yeah, and then, you know, obviously a lot of people say, okay, so how come Javonte Smart got to play today? And LSU kind of laid that out for a variety – I think there were 3 specific reasons they pointed out. One, Javonte Smart explained himself. Now, whether – you know, what? How much truth did he – I don't know. You know, I don't know what the conversation was, but at least he spoke, and they said he was transparent and he was cooperative. Will Wade has been none of that. So I'm not saying that Joe Oliva has handled this thing 100% correct either. You would think this – you just didn't think that – you know, when that story broke on Thursday, I thought When it first happened, I was hoping that Oliva and Will Wade would somehow get on the same page, but maybe Joe tried to get on the same page with Will, but obviously Will's not being cooperative. So it's just a mess. It's messed up situation, and it's just unfortunate that Will Wade was the one caught here, and he was caught talking about a player, we presume, that's currently on the team. A lot of these other wires, like the Kansas assistant, talking about Zion Williamson. Well, Kansas didn't get Zion Williamson, so you can't really punish him because the kid's not on their team.
Right.
So I don't know. It's a horrible situation for LSU basketball. And
any updates on possible projected start time here?
No.
We are in a rain delay at Alex Box Stadium. We are in the Champions Club. Jeff Palermo and Christian Garrick here. Phone lines are open at 504-260-1870. We will remain here on the air throughout the rain delay, and Seth Dunlap for the last lap coming up at 8 o'clock potentially if we're not underway at the box. Get to a couple of your text messages and your phone calls next hour here, 504-260-1870. Text 870-870. This is WWL. Off and running to our fourth and hopefully final hour of sports talk. LSU baseball is in a rain delay. Kind of a lanyap edition. We were supposed to be done at 6:30, but weather decided, you know what? We're going to act like it's June in Baton Rouge. Here it is in March. We expect these rain delays in June for regionals and super regionals, but welcome to SEC baseball. Welcome to LSU baseball. Jeff Palermo alongside. I'm Christian Garrick. Phone lines are open at 504-260-1870. Text 870-870. And we're going to throw it to Mark Menard, a massive update and a massive upset from the UNO Privateers men's basketball team, Mark.
Yeah, UNO in Katy, Texas for the Southland Conference Tournament. They won yesterday, obviously, to make it to the semifinal, and today taking on the top seed Sam Houston State Bearcats. And it was just moments ago the Privateers pull off the big upset as the four seed, knocking off the one, 79-76, the final score. Taking a look at the box score here, and it was leading scorer was Jorge Rosa with 18 points. And then Damian Rosaire also with 11 to help pace the Privateers in that one. So they're moving on to the Southland Conference Final. That's going to be tomorrow. And, of course, if they win that, then they will be going dancing for the second time under Mark Schlesinger. So he's doing a great job out there on the lakefront with the Privateers. The other semifinal tonight, starting probably in about 20 minutes from now, it's going to be the Southeastern Louisiana Lions taking on Abilene Christian. So it could be an all boot final here tomorrow, and we could be guaranteed two Louisiana schools in the big dance because we know LSU is going to make it. We just don't know, you know, where they're going to be seated. And then, of course, later tonight, UL Monroe has a chance in the Sun Belt Conference. They're in the quarterfinals taking on Georgia Southern. So we could have as many as three Louisiana schools in the big dance come next Sunday. So we'll have to wait and see how that all plays out. But UNO with a great chance now to advance to the NCAA tournament.
Who says that this is a football state? Come on. It's basketball town. We might as well be in Indiana or Kentucky right there in the basketball universe. Mark Menard at Master Control giving us the updates. And Coach Schles, that's a big win for him.
That's a huge win.
I'm such a fan of him in general, just as a person. But what he's done with that UNO Privateers basketball team has been outstanding. I mean, you know, I wish him continued success. And I just, unfortunately, I think if he continues to have success there, he won't be there very long.
Well, I did for the Southland Conference. It was a couple weeks ago, in fact. I did the UNL Sam Houston State game played at the Lakefront Arena. And for people not familiar with Privateers basketball, they lost their best player, Ezekiel Charles. He tore his Achilles in a practice right around Valentine's Day. And for them to beat that was a really good Sam Houston team that shares the ball well, hits three-pointers at a high volume, and for them to – and in that game at the Lakefront Arena, they got down by 10 points, and they never really could get it – they never could really get it down to five or four to really challenge them because Sam Houston State was that good. But that's an impressive win for them. So wish them the best of luck in the Southland Conference Tournament Championship game.
Back to the phones we go. We find Marty in Metairie. What's going on, Marty? You're on WWL.
Hey, good evening. I'm really proud of UNO, man. That's really great that they're doing so well. Good for them.
Yeah, and you know what, Marty? sometimes we get a little flack from, you know, UNO fans or Tulane fans or whatever because we're part of the LSU Sports Radio Network at WWL. But you know what? I can sit here and tell you, I want every in-state school to do well, just like in baseball. I mean, I want to see Southeastern have success, ULL, UNO, all of them, Tulane. I want to see all of them because that's just a great representation for the state of Louisiana.
Absolutely. And when they do well, I mean, let's face it, when they do well, then we're going to hear more about them, too. It's good. It's so good to see them back. I want to ask you a quick question. Earlier you said that Kansas didn't get in trouble because they didn't get the guy. So what I'd like to ask you is, isn't there something to answer for if you get caught on tape trying?
Well, they weren't caught on tape.
I'm just wondering.
Well, Jeff's the one that
said.
The dad was asking for a benefit, and he was caught talking to a Kansas assistant coach. But
I thought you meant that there was something. I'm sorry, I misunderstood.
No, yeah, Zion Williamson's father on the FBI tape was asking for, hey, could you do this for me? This and this, if my son would go there. And it was with a Kansas assistant coach. That was the conversation.
Marty, anything else, man?
Call for clarification.
All right, you bet.
Thank you.
All right, you bet, Marty. Enjoy your weekend, Doc in Ponchatoula.
Thank you, man.
What's going on, Doc? You're on WWL.
You going?
Go ahead, Doc.
Hey, I just wanted to comment about the poll you had going on about LSU baseball. Honestly. Longtime fan of Tiger baseball, and I listen and watch to almost every single game. Honestly, I don't think they're quite ready for SEC play, but to me, they look like the Major League, the movie Major League. With, I hate to put it that way, but, you know, in the movie, the pieces come together, you know, and you just got to give these guys some time. And honestly, they have the pieces. They just have to put the puzzle together.
Yeah, Doc, I think if you listen to me and Jeff, we both said, hey, we get it, that the expectations have been so high for this LSU baseball program, in particular this year, because they were ranked by just about every publication at number one or number two, and we heard about this highly touted recruiting class, Jeff, that was loaded with dominant pitching in high school. And sometimes, just like in hitting, when they get these great recruiting classes, Jeff, of these hitters, you see them come in, and they got to adjust to life. D1 college baseball at this level in the SEC, it takes them a little while as hitters to adjust, so we shouldn't expect any difference from a pitcher that was last year at this time pitching at the high school level. Some at small schools with attendance of 300 or 400 to games at best. That was a maximum attendance. So they go from pitching in front of 300 people to pitching in front of 9, 10, 11,000 people. So there's an adjustment there for these 18- and 19-year-old young men.
And it always amazes me, Christian. I mean, Paul Mainieri's what, in his 13th season, I think, and they've been to the NCAA tournament every year except two, right? 2011 or what is it? 2011, and then 2000, his first year, 2007, I guess it would have been. So he hasn't been there for two seasons, and you can almost throw the first season out because that was
he was inheriting a mess from Smoke LaVall.
Yeah. So. And nearly every year this team, once April 15th, I always kind of circle that as the date, as tax day. Once that date comes around, this team takes it into another gear, and it, and those pieces do come together. Now, there have been some very disappointing finishes. You know, losing to Florida in the championship series, LSU was just as good as that Florida team. We know about the Stony Brooks. We know about the loss to Houston in the regional. They've had some tough breaks. Rafe Rimes going 0-for-5 in a College World Series game when the guy was hitting over 400 all season long, or near 500 all season long. So, I mean, they've had some weird things happen to them in some of for their seasons to end before reaching the goals that you thought they can get them. But it's still been a good program. But I did get the sense, you know, when we were in this room. In January, I guess it was, for media day, that even from Coach Paul Mainieri, that there was a little bit more of an emphasis of, all right, it's time to get back to Omaha, But not only get back there, win one. It 2009. It's 2019 now.
10 years.
It's been 10. It's almost hard to imagine that. But now it's been 10 years since they have won, and I think Paul Maneri's feeling that, and he really wants to see this team excel. And maybe I think there was this belief, Christian, that this team would go, you know, 42-13 or something like that through the 50, that this would just be a cakewalk. And it's turned out it's not, and it's a lot of different factors. It's young guys, it's a few injuries, it's certain guys that you thought were really going to produce, haven't produced. You just got to give it a little time. It's not like football. You know, like in football, when you're ranked preseason number one, yeah, if you fell down to 11 or 12, that would be surely disappointing. That means you probably lost a couple of times. But here in baseball, there's plenty of time to make up for it.
Yeah, and, you know, again, I agree with you. April. April is where you start paving the way.
Yeah.
You know, you start really carving out your resume. Albeit these SEC games are important. But, again, you know, you go 20-10 in the SEC, you're going to be a top eight national seed. The magic number is typically around 19 to 21 wins in the conference, and you're going to be a top eight national seed. I mean, look, I love to remind LSU fans that might be saying, oh, Paul Maneri is the problem, et cetera, et cetera. Well, he took five teams to the NCAA tournament. He's won the SEC – I mean, to the NCAA tournament. He's won the SEC tournament six times. He's got a national championship and a national runner-up to his resume. I mean, there's a lot of baseball programs that would go, oh, not good enough for you?
Yeah.
We'll take him. I mean, and you also LSU fans sometimes still get caught up in the days of Gorilla Baseball and Skip Bertman when they didn't have the scholarship restrictions of 11.7 for every program. I mean, when Skip Bertman was putting together these powerhouse teams, he had stockpiled talent throughout that could start for any other team, including his own, because he didn't have any restrictions of 11.7 scholarships. It's just the landscape of college baseball these days, Jeff.
I would say the one thing that might be a little bit, and we hit on this a little bit in the last hour, that's a little different about this start compared to others is that in those previous seasons here with Paul Maneri where they got off to a slow start, there was always that one stud pitcher, right, that you knew you could count on, whether it was Alex Lang, whether it was Aaron Nola, Kevin Gausman. You knew there was that guy. We don't know if Zach Hess is that guy. That's my only where you can, or you had a stable guy like a Jared Poche there for those four seasons where, especially after his freshman season, you knew you can count on a guy like Poche that by the time May, even if he had a couple of bad starts in the middle of late March, early April, you knew when the chips were on the table, he was going to really give you good performance, especially in the postseason.
Now,
you don't know that.
I agree.
You don't. That is my one thing about this team, maybe compared to those others. But I still think offensively it's going to come around. And when it comes around, by the time May gets here, it's going to look like a thing of beauty. This offense is going to be cranking because there's a lot of good hitters there. Especially now you add in Duplantis who can hit some home runs. And with Zach Watson, with Cabrera, if Beloso keeps hitting the ball the way he is, eventually somebody else is going to step up. You got Josh Smith. I mean, by the time the season rolls around, you're going to see seven guys, in my opinion, in that lineup that are hitting 300 or better.
Yeah, I'll take it one step further with that. As far as not having the guy, you're not sure if you had that one dominant pitcher.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that they have that alpha leader as well, because that's another staple that's been with this LSU baseball program. Under Paul Maneri, you always had guys like Alex Bregman, Kramer Robertson.
Yeah.
You had Michael Papirski, who was a great leader as well. He was
Rafe
one of those.
Rafe Rimes.
I mean, Mikey Matuk.
Mason Katz.
Yeah. I mean, so I don't know who that dude is. Yeah, I don't know who that dude is.
I would say Josh Smith might be the closest to it probably right now, but he's a guy that's coming
still
off.
Working his way back.
Yeah, he missed an entire year last year, so it's hard for him to be that leader. Cabrera's kind of a quiet guy. Zach Watson is kind of quiet too. Yeah, you don't have – I mean, we've had the pleasure of covering some real personalities.
Alex Lang had a personality.
Yes. Bregman was a big-time – not to say – and I'm not saying personality, but you could tell when there were a lot of – he was an alpha dog. There's no doubt about it. So,
I mean, for me, Jeff – that Texas series, that's not the only adversity this team's going to encounter this year.
They're gonna.
All right. You remember in 2017, Kramer Robertson was the guy that stepped up and said, look, I need to play better, and so does the entire team. And that's when they got hot. That's when they got on that run. And in order to be a leader, though, you also have to be willing to call yourself out, but also have to be able to, you also have to be able to step up when you say, hey, everybody's got to play well, including me. I got to play better. It starts with me. Then you got to go out there and execute that. And it's hard to lead and get guys to follow you when you're not playing very well either. So for a guy like Zach Hess, or I mean, Josh Smith could certainly do it because he's playing well, but Zach Hess, he can't say anything yet until he goes out there for a couple of two or three weekends and starts dominating.
Yeah, and I know Zach Hess wants to be a leader. There's no doubt about it. And Todd Peterson, the same thing. He can be a guy as your closer that can be a leader in that bullpen. So there's guys that want to do it. They just know they got to have better results on the field before they can really become that leader. And still time to do it.
Terry and Slidell, what's going on, Terry? You're on Sports Talk on WWL.
Hey, guys. How y'all going today?
Good, man. Thank you.
Look, you know, I love LSU baseball to death, but baseball season just started. We got a basketball team that's going to the NCAA, and I think that's what everybody needs to be talking about. You know, baseball, hey, we're going to be all right later in the year, but right now with LSU's basketball team, it's going to be a top two or three seed in the NCAA tournament. And, you know, all you're doing is football. Baseball, you know, it's going to be here, but basketball is what's going on at the present time. And that's what I think, you know, most people need to talk about. They don't talk about the basketball team as much. You know, for two or three years, we had Johnny Jones coaching, and by this time of the year, LSU fans have seen it been over for 2 weeks.
Terry, I'm going to tell you the same thing I used to tell Pelicans fans, et cetera. First off, we do talk a lot of – we have been talking a lot of LSU basketball because they've been relevant. It's not our job to make a team relevant. It's their job to make themselves relevant by winning. LSU, hats off to them and on their basketball team. They've done that. They won the SEC outright regular season championship. They were done in the SEC tournament. There is going to be plenty of time to talk LSU basketball as well. It just so happens that they lost today. It's the opener of SEC play for LSU baseball against Kentucky tonight. And, oh, by the way, Jeff, why can't you talk about both, which we have? We've talked about both basketball and baseball. And, oh, by the way, before the show's over, I'm sure we might end up mixing up some spring practice and football.
you're right about that. My attitude towards it at this point is that the basketball conversation has been a bit depressing.
Yes.
It has. And so after the loss today, you just kind of – I think you need a little break because it's been very intense. At least here living in Baton Rouge, it's been very intense. What was a program that looked like was going to be, Christian, a solid
nightmare
for the next decade, right? If, as long as Will Wade was here, for the next decade was going to be a force in college basketball. Now you have no idea what to expect. Next year, the team could be so decimated that they might only win two games in conference play. That was unfathomable, or that's not the word. You know what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
That was unimaginable 8 days ago after they beat Florida. And for me personally, I'm glad we're talking a little baseball here tonight because it's a depressing topic,
well,
really, to be honest with you. And because it's depressing of how college basketball is and at this, and not that anybody's shocked by what was said in that wiretap, but it's the evil side of college athletics, and LSU's caught up in it, and it's front and center, and there's really nothing positive because there's no one's going to win out of this whole entire situation. Usually there's a winner. You know, even like in the no call in the NFC Championship game, there was a winner.
Oh, boy.
There was the Rams. They were the winner.
You're
in this
giving
situation.
A lot of Saints fans a hard time right now.
I don't know if there was really a winner, and maybe there was Alvin Gentry probably won in the whole Anthony Davis thing because I think a lot of people respect Alvin Gentry now compared to the whole thing. But in this situation, there is no winner. Nobody comes out a winner, and this program, which looked like it had such a bright future now, it's such a question mark from here on out.
And you know why, too, is because I think that a lot of basketball fans, LSU fans in particular, can see that this is just the tip of the iceberg here with this Will Wade situation. I mean, there's a potential that LSU basketball could pay a hefty price, you know, in some sort of in a form of sanctions. And, you know, you can almost see the end of the movie already. You know that in all likelihood, Will Wade is probably never going to coach a basketball game again in the PMAC or as head coach of the LSU Tigers. So that part of it, that's where it goes back to your take, which is it's depressing because it's almost like, yeah, that's great, but, man, they've got this other thing going on with your program that we don't know the answer to. So it's hard for me to get terribly excited about that prospect when I know that maybe next year we're going, LSU basketball is bad again.
Yeah, and it was. The Johnny Jones years there towards the end after Ben Simmons left, those were some tough years. The final 3 years of Trent Johnson was that rough. I mean, so many fans got on the bandwagon here. I would say even more on the bandwagon than that Final Four team in 06 because of just how people were so – it had been so long since there was a dominant basketball program here.
CBS News Update and back here at the Box in the Champions Club here. Jeff Palermo, Christian Garrick here on Sports Talk on WWL.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.